Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You're absolutely right. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. It's the 20th day of March 2014. Spring is springing. And we've got 3 hours of conversation ahead of us this evening. A gentle reminder before we go any further, the phones are still out. I mean, technically they work, but the thing that brings the phones into the mix desk that makes it possible to take calls doesn't. And I'm trying to find out just exactly what's going on there. But no, the traditional phone lines still don't work. So that means, like, for instance, tomorrow's Friday on the Front Porch will be entirely Skype-driven, as our phone calls right here, right now. You can still reach the program. It's just a matter of using Skype, which is really, really easy. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact, and if this continues much longer, I'll just buy a phone number from them so that you can reach the program with a regular phone by calling a Skype number. There just hasn't been a lot of time for that yet. Anyway, it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you will find, yes, yay verily, the chat room where Chan and Jerry are checked in, as is Mr. Gibson. Long-time indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky is with us, and more folks will be wandering by. As the show gets show program gets underway, it would have to have like sequence or something to be a show, right? Thanks going out to Paul. Paul jumped in this evening to get us started on fundraising. So we've only got $110 to go instead of the usual $150 to get going to get the fundraising taken care of this evening. Thank you very much, Paul. So there you have it. And the PayPal button is, of course, at headonradionetwork.com, as is the traditional mail address, with the gentle reminder that all checks and or money orders should be made payable to the Horn or Head On Communications, something like that, and not to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not receive the money. So, there we go. No, we got lots of thorns. I mean, this is an absolute rose garden of thorns. But, well, one isn't. Ron and Raleigh can always be counted on for some good musical selections, and it was right there in the inbox. So let's go to the music to get things started this evening.
Everybody always misused him, ripped him off and abused him. Another jerk kept playing, pushing dope for the man. A terrible blow, but that's how it goes. Freddy's on the corner now, if you want to be a junkie, well, remember Freddy's dead. We're all built up with progress, but sometimes I must confess, we can deal with rockets and dreams, but reality, what does it mean? Ain't nothing said, 'cause Freddy's dead.
Remember, Fred is dead. And I guess that will comprise our memorial to a man who wasted his existence upon this sweet little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. Fred Phelps is dead. No there's no cause for celebration. It's the one thing that humanity has in common with all other living things on the planet. Everybody gets to do it at some point in time. But, the news came down that Fred Phelps has shuffled off this mortal coil and gone wherever the candle flame goes when the candle flame goes out. But at least, you know, since I do not ascribe to Christianity, I don't have to say anything about how I'll pray for his soul. Or how I hope his family has forgiveness. Dude's dead, Jim. He's dead, Jim. Right. Yeah, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. I thought I said that. Maybe I didn't. But anyway, I was talking about Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. It's going to be all Skype. But, okay, just to get this out of my system and maybe out of the rest of our systems, I take some of it back. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh, for that perfect little interlude. Fred is dead. It was Curtis Mayfield, of course. And so for everybody who was ever subjected to Fred Phelps' vile, vicious, toxic hate, a different song, another song. Yeah, here we go.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say. Sunshine, she's here, you can take a break. I'm a hot air balloon that could go to space. With the air, like I don't care, baby, by the way.
And you know what? That's an excellent song, by the way, just because it's the first day of spring. Right? Yeah. Irish Dave pointing out Fred's dead. Really, really dead. Now, that's the first day of spring I can celebrate. On the other hand, I fear Fred will be appearing at the... what? I fear Fred will be appearing at the 9/11 store in 3 days. Oh, God. Isn't it, I mean, there is pause for reflection in Fred Phelps. Isn't it sad? Isn't it pitiful that a man would be granted 84 years upon this earth, which is such a small, small, tiny bit of time in the grand scheme of things, and that he would use it to try to make other people miserable. That is the sad part, indeed. So, okay, have we gotten that out of our system? I'm just checking here. Hopefully, yes. I wasn't the only one to notice the irony of Fred Phelps dying and springing in the Northern Hemisphere. Happy first day of autumn to our friends in the Southern Hemisphere. May your winter not be the beastly, awful thing that ours was. Well, not everybody's. I was looking earlier today. It was 5:30 p.m. and 72 degrees in Sydney, and it was, or, I mean, 5:30 a.m. and it was 72 degrees in Sydney, and it was 5:30 p.m. and 72 degrees in Frankfurt, Germany, all at the same time that it was whatever time it was here. And, 45 degrees in Appalachia. Oh, well. Jim wants to know who did the Happy song. The name of the song is just Happy. It is a lot of fun. That's by Pharrell Williams, P-H-A-R-R-E-L-L Williams, Pharrell Williams. We've been well, Ferg's kind of had an earworm with it, and we've been listening a lot lately. And it just struck me that that would be a nice counterpoint to Fred is Dead. Yeah, Pharrell Williams. Happy. It really is. It's kind of upbeat, and well, it's got a great beat, and you can dance to it. Yeah, thank you, Dick Clark. It is, though. It really is, though. We got to walk. We're going into the swamp sooner or later. Might as well get started. Thorn in the Side Thursday. You may recall we discussed the remarks by that smart Republican. You know, the zombie-eyed granny starver. Zegs. Paul Ryan. About how those inner city men, and, you know, doing a little, you know, little code whistling there. You know, those inner city men are, you know, just won't work, and they're all shiftless and stuff. And, right. And they're why we can't have anything nice anymore. Well, it turns out that Paul Ryan went to a town hall meeting there in Racine, Wisconsin yesterday, where, lo and behold, he was confronted by a man with dark skin, which probably made Paul Ryan about have a fit. But bless the courageous man's soul, Alfonso Gardner, age 61, of Racine, Wisconsin. Well, he wanted to know about the tailspin. Remember Paul Ryan said we're in a tailspin that was caused by shiftless inner city men who lay around in their dependency hammocks. Yeah. Let's check in with Zegs. This is going to be absolutely delightful. Because there's nothing like letting a racist try to explain himself. Remember when Rick Santorum said blah? Sorry, it's being held in a gymnasium. Because when you say inner city, come on. No, that's a, you caught that, right? I mean, there's a lot of, there's more reverb than there is in there than there is in here. Oh, well, anyway, no, so Paul Ryan says, there wasn't anything about race. I deserve to explain. The point I was trying to make isn't the point that was made. So what? Well, it'd be kind of hard to call him evil Paul Ryan from the alternate universe. Eviler Paul Ryan from the alternate universe. It stepped in and it, like Frank Gorshin or I don't know. Oh, it's our fault. We misinterpreted him. I guess he was speaking in Reformed Egyptian or something. Unfortunately, And you heard that there were a few claps in the room. What Alfonso Gardner said was, you said what you meant. When you said inner city, it was a code word for black. And that's when Ryan said, I get to talk too. There was nothing whatsoever about race in my comments at all. See? And of course, it's Mr. Gardner's fault, because Ryan, I think when we throw these charges of racism around, it should be based on something. Well, it is. It's based, Paul, on the fact that you're a racist. Yeah? Scott Keyes of Think Progress interviewed Alfonso Gardner after the event, and Gardner said to him, he's out here shucking, jiving. He's been in Congress 8 terms and just now talking about poverty. Because even though Paul Ryan says that, nah, it didn't have anything to do with race, I was just talking about people who live in the inner city. Well, the comments that he made came in the context of discussing the entirely discredited blatherings of a white supremacist by the name of Charles Murray. Writing about Charles Murray, the Southern Poverty Law Center said that Murray uses racist pseudoscience and misleading statistics to argue that social inequality is caused by the genetic inferiority of African Americans. Something that has been banging around out there one way or another for quite some time, really. Wait, I guess everybody's genetically inferior to the white folks, right? Depending, of course, on how one defines white folks. As we discussed, it's a sliding scale. But that guy that went to, what was his name? The guy that went to work for the Heritage Foundation and then got his ass bounced when it found out that, when everybody found out that he had authored papers arguing that Americans of Hispanic origin, Latino origins, were not as smart as white people and never could be. Yeah, I know. They just can't quite get past their Confederate roots, can they? Mm-mm. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, I'm trying to picture Paul Ryan with a goatee. Calling a right-winger a racist makes you a racist that has played the race card. Of course it does. Because, you know, there's never... Oh, well, okay, Irish Dave. Come on, Bob, Trump Tower is in the inner city of Manhattan. But there's a ton of stuff out there. Oh my, oh my, oh my. When it comes, and this is not an extension of Prayer Meeting Wednesday, but I jokingly said the other day that some right winger would eventually say of Flight 370, it's the rapture. Well, when they go pro, they go pro. When the going gets weird, the weird turn pro. That's the actual Hunter Thompson quote, I believe. None other than the daughter of that older than Fred Phelps huckster, Billy Graham, has officially opined. Her name is Anne Graham Lotz, L-O-T-Z. The folks over at Right Wing Watch caught up with her. Or, well, caught on to her. She has a blog, of course. And what it is that makes these people feel like they are privileged enough to opine about, who knows? Ann Graham Lotz's blog reads as follows. The blog is titled, "Where Have All the People Gone?" And it cites 1 Thessalonians 4:16 and 17. "For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel and with the trumpet call of God." Please note, it's not a saxophone call of God. And it's certainly not a flute. And it isn't a tuba. It is a trumpet. Damn it. "And the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds." Isn't that going to be a little bit smelly, getting caught up with all the dead who rose first? "To meet the Lord in the air, and so we will be with the Lord forever." You know, that's what is referred to as that great getting up morning. She says, "On March 8th, 2014, a Malaysia Airlines Boeing 777 on its way from Kuala Lumpur to Beijing vanished." See, I don't like the word vanished either. It didn't vanish. It didn't vanish. I mean, you could say that it vanished from radar screens, but it didn't vanish. Every last molecule, every last atom of that aircraft is still inside the closed loop system that is Earth. But for Ann Lotz, it vanished over the South China Sea. We don't even know that. No, we don't even know that. "Without a trace," which is an entirely separate sentence, "and with 239 people on board," which is also a sentence fragment. "It's being described as an unprecedented mystery." By whom? Where is it? Where have all the people gone? "The pictures of grieving friends and family members of those who are missing are heart-wrenching. I've prayed for God's peace and comfort for them, as well as God's direction of the search and rescue teams." And he apparently hasn't been terribly successful, because so far only the Australians have found a few pieces of stuff. "Who are desperately looking for clues that will solve the mystery." Mystery. "But the unanswered questions seem to intensify the horror. How could a modern airliner drop out of sight so quickly and completely? What happened to the plane itself? Was it hijacked? Was it blown out of the sky? Did something happen to the pilots so that without guidance the plane plunged intact into the depths of the sea? My God, somebody get this woman on Don Lemon's show over on the Chicken Noodle News." Irish Dave asking, "But Bob, isn't not liking the word vanished anti-semantic? You got to get up early to keep up with Irish Dave. You really do. Did something happen to the pilots so that without guidance, the plane plunged intact into the depths of the sea?" Oh, she already asked that. Bottom line, where are all the people? Here is the church and here is the steeple. Open the doors and... yeah. "The answers don't seem to be forthcoming as I write this. But as I have prayerfully pondered all of the above, I can't help but wonder, is this worldwide sense of shock and helplessness, of questions and confusion, of fear and grief, a glimpse of things to come? Is this a
small snapshot of what the entire world will experience the day after the rapture of the church? Because the Bible is clear. No, it isn't. It's as clear as mud. There's coming a moment in time when Jesus will come back to gather himself to himself, all those dead and alive who've put their trust in him. And on that day, the world will be asking, where have all the people gone? Not just 239 of us, but millions of us. On that day, with millions of people directly impacted by their own missing friends and family members, in the midst of overwhelming shock and helplessness, of questions and confusion, of fear and grief, when the world searches for clues, how easily will they find the answer in what I leave behind? Instead of an oil slick, will there be traces of his grace and glory and truth? Jesus is coming. This is a thought I can't seem to shake, so I share it with you. Will your life and mine be a light to the world that points people to Jesus after the rapture? Sincerely. Anne Graham Lotz. I couldn't live in Anne Graham Lotz's world. If I was a praying person, I'd pray for the rapture every day so that these weirdos would get out of our lives. Then maybe we could do something about climate change, because, you know, they, of course, deny it. Then maybe we could do something about the various and sundry global disasters that these people don't give a good old-fashioned tinker's damn about. One, shoo, rapture up, go on, get all eschatological, go on, get your millennial on, shoo, go on, Ann Lotz, get. And isn't there something patently offensive about this Fundy woman presuming to have the power somehow to alter the forces of nature by praying at people? Wasn't there a study a little while back that said that lo and behold, it turns out that telling somebody you're praying for them can often make them worse? Oh, I had no idea. Under the subject line, celebration, Kate noting, another reason to celebrate Nowruz, the Persian New Year. Now we wait for some more of these folks to shuffle off. Happy, happy. Under the subject line, I've seen this, Ron and Raleigh writes in, sounds like an episode of The Walking Dead. A lot of Asian people, mostly Muslims and Buddhists, were raptured. P.S. I'm calling Irish Dave for gimmick infringement. Oh, that was with the Bob. Irish Dave, that's Ron's gimmick. Irish Dave also says, don't look back, Anne, because something pillar of salt, you know, her last name is Lotz. So you knew it was going to happen, and it did. And it didn't just happen from someone. No, this is from the Fundy elite. Where have all the people gone? Long time passing. Lord, Lord, Lord. I mean, oh, goodness me. Now, of course, I understand that there are probably a number of folks who are otherwise engaged because the big dance started today.
But Travis Waldron over at Think Progress has the answer to a question. Who will win the NCAA tournament? The NCAA. He says, the true winner of this tournament, though, is predetermined. It is the NCAA, the organization that will bring in hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue in this three-week period alone. And compared to other sports organizations or business enterprises in America, it will distribute a minimal amount of that money back to the players who make it all happen. By the way, the contract price for the broadcast rights to this, $10.8 billion. That's what CBS and Turner Sports paid to the NCAA. $10.8 billion. How many college basketball players are there? I mean, let's assume there are some administrative costs and so forth. But anybody care to support the argument again that these athletes who are out there generating $10.8 billion for something that is supposedly a non-profit organization should somehow not be paid? Out in Vegas, the bookmakers say that making book on the first 4 days of the tournament will generate as much money as the Super Bowl. Yeah. The NCAA claims that the value of a scholarship, a full-ride athletic scholarship, ranges from $15,000 at an in-state school to $35,000 at a private university. And that's what we consider. Okay, so let's use that top end number, $140,000 for 4 years of college. $10.8 billion. It's hard to get people to get their minds around this, but this is, you know, this is basically professional athletics in the days of the reserve clause. This is the professional athletics of the Black Sox scandal. And, of course, the first, a little bit of shock for folks over there in Buckeye Nation, this was the first game tipped off, and it was the Ohio State University versus Dayton. Final score, 60, Dayton 60, Ohio State 59. Oops. Turned into rather a tough day for at least a couple of schools out of the state of Ohio because fifth seed Cincinnati fell rather ignominiously to Harvard. 10 seed. Yeah, but we got to focus. But it doesn't matter. 1 seed, 16 seed, whatever. These are people who are working to support millionaires. All that malarkey about the purity of amateur athletics, ha. Not hardly. Not by a long shot. Let's look then over to Dennis Prager. This guy's an absolute just bundle of joy. Dennis Prager is a big supporter of chinless Mitch McConnell. You remember our clip last night from Flush Flemball talking about how he didn't want a National Women's Museum because we've got one in every town and it's called a mall. Yeah. Well, Dennis Prager is not very far off. Dennis Prager is a jerk. Yesterday, he hosted a political fundraiser for Senator Mitch McConnell. And Mitch McConnell was happy to take the money that was raised. Well, then let's check in with Dennis Prager and see. You got to wonder if any of the women people gave money to Mitch McConnell at this thing. He's on air. This is Dennis Prager on the air. Let's check in.
Great examples of the terrible damage done by a feminist thought on the sexes. Because it was based on theory, not reality. Feminism is a rebellion against nature. Nature made men and women different. Nature made women want men. And feminism said women need men like fish need bicycles. Right? That was the idea. It is a rebellion. It's the rebellion of theory versus reality. This boys are different. What has happened today is a generation that has been raised by these egalitarian / sameness values is raising your boy. Nearly all your boys' teachers are women, and many of them are wonderful people. It's not an attack on them, and nearly all their principals are women. But they have been often influenced in schools of education, in college, et cetera, by the notion that boys and girls have similar needs, and the only problems really are, if there are any problems at all, girls not getting their fair share of attention in class. Remember when the old stories of boys and girls raised their hands, boys were called on first, and so on and so forth. So as a result, what has happened is what is natural to boys, which is to jump on each other, beat each other up. I don't mean beat each other up in a serious way.
Not in a serious way. Just a general beating. Because, you know, boys are like that. Boys just do that. Boys just beat each other up. You heard him say it. That's the natural order of things. Isn't it interesting to hear these fundies and these right-wingers talking about something having a natural order when there is a natural order of things, but they reject that conclusively and out of hand? More on that in a minute.
Each other up in a play way, not to play even tag with the girl, which was the highlight of my entire elementary school experience. That is all I remember from elementary school, recess. I have no idea what went on in class.
And you know what? The preceding 1 minute and 59 seconds gives us reason to believe what he said there. All he remembers is recess. Wait a minute. Don't you learn that stuff like 1 and 1 is 2 and I before E except after C and things like that in elementary school? This guy's actually telling us he does not remember basic math. He can't do his cipher and his gazintas. But wait.
And I would chase the girls and tag, and it was a highlight of my being, of my existential reality. This is forbidden.
Yeah, you got that? Chasing girls is the natural order of things. Meanwhile,
that really transcends. He is, to me, one of the great examples of the terrible damage done by a feminist thought on...
Yeah, Dennis, shut up. He goes on and says that a woman should have sex with her husband. Now, of course, sex can only be had by people who are married in the sight of some deity. But a woman's duty is to have sex with her husband any time he wants it. Now, Dennis, really, I'm trying to do the dishes here. Dennis, I'm trying to mow the lawn. Dennis,
I'm trying to fix the plumbing. Anytime he wants sex, a woman has to drop everything and have sex. He says, regardless of her mood. Because after all, how would a woman feel if her husband only went to work when he felt like it? This, of course, negates or ignores the fact that Dennis Prager apparently still lives in a world where Ward Cleaver goes off to work and June Cleaver stays home and does whatever June Cleaver did. Just as a matter of remembering, the last time in America when a single wage earner household was the majority household with a spouse remaining at home was the Carter administration. That all had to go bye-bye when Ronnie Reagan came to town. So not only does a woman have to also work, as he said, you know, if the husband doesn't know, how would she like that? Well, how would the husband like it if she just decided not to go to work because she didn't feel like it? Thus, in the past generation, we have witnessed the demise of the concept of obligation in personal relations. To many women, especially among the best educated, see, there's the problem, that edumacating the women folk, the notion that a woman owes her husband sex seems absurd, if not actually immoral. They have been taught that such a sense of obligation renders her property. A woman is not property when she feels she owes her husband conjugal relations. She is simply wise enough to recognize that marriage is based on mutual obligations as opposed to rights alone, and certainly as opposed to moods, are likely to be the best marriages. God. Isn't it immoral? Now, granted, these people are in charge of morals, or so they say. But isn't it immoral for two supposedly equal partners in a relationship, for one of them to suppose that the other must always be... But then again, these are the people who believe that verse from Flip-Floppians or whatever it is that says that women are always to be in the submitting business because they've got these weird-ass dominance and submission fantasies. Now, this just in from our buddy Michael. Dennis Prager is a jerk. Dennis Prager is a jerk, Bob? Are you auditioning for those Captain Obvious travel commercials? Hey, look, sure, why not? And a note coming in from Philip. We haven't heard from Philip in a while. Subject line, Ryan's Hope. I know this is going to be good. Sorry to be absent for so long, Bob, but my eardrums had to heal from the piercing and constant sounds of Republican dog whistling. As a fellow potato-eating, overpopulating, shiftless, drunken descendant of folks from the old sod, I must admit that I never thought my ethnic kinfolk, a la Ryan, Coulter, O'Reilly, and Hannity, would become smugly elitist racists and racialists who dishonestly try to conceal their racism in code. Father Coughlin and Joe McCarthy, where are you when we need you? Recently, my daughter did a college-sponsored externship at the Center for Immigration Studies, a euphemism for a right-wing xenophobic think tank, and had to hear the likes of Bay Buchanan advising her fellow Republicans that California was lost and the party needed to appeal to more whites to retain power. Even Bay was astute enough to advise the brethren and sistren that they must conceal their true agenda to get elected and not mention immigration or any other hot issues. She also urged them to solicit the Tea Party to the cause without any brandishment of the Tea Party insignia and any other identifying remarks. Election by stealth, if you will. As my daughter sat at the table listening with listening to the mindlessness of Bay's babble, the right-wingers at her table discussed how undocumented immigrants benefited from government programs and paid no taxes. Whereupon my daughter said,
My father worked for the IRS and prepared returns for undocumented immigrants who filed every year before they returned to their home countries. They paid into programs from which they will derive no benefits and were often deprived of wages by bosses who deprived them of their full wages because they had no real means of protest. Way to end the conversation, kiddo. When my daughter was first invited through her school, she said, "Dad, I don't really want to go." I advised her to go and listen to what was discussed and then make up her own mind. What, Dad? She came back aghast and said, "It was far worse than I thought. Babe Buchanan said the rest of them are bigoted idiots." Or Babe Buchanan and the rest of them are bigoted idiots. Sometimes you have to expose the youngsters to danger and ignorance to teach them, and they succeeded far better than I in convincing my daughter that the Republicans are the white party living in deep fear of the dark masses. Thanks, Bay, and be sure to say Gruscott to Pat for me, will ya? After all, he'd sound so much better if he articulated his views in the original German. Be well. Philip. Oh, and you know, that's we're talking about children who have been well-raised, or as we like to say around here, raised right. So naturally, Philip had no misgivings about letting his daughter go out and hear the weirdos. Because he knew that with her having been raised right, she was not going to become a weirdo herself. Just as Fred Phelps is one of the, turned himself into the leading argument for LGBTQ rights, so too the Bay Buchanans and other, and the Dennis Pragers and the, look, just let the women of America hear Dennis Prager. Let the women of America hear Flush Flimball talking about how we've already got lots of women's museums and they're called malls. Let them hear that. Now, I think the psychological question that I would like to have answered is, what about the women who hear that and say, right, that's the way I'm voting? Then again, you know, and Graham Lotz. Right. By the way, from Ron and Raleigh, some math on the fly from the NCAA story. 64 teams in tourney, 15 players approximately per team, equals 960 players plus or minus. Now, gazinta that into $10.8 billion and see what you come up with. Right. Ron asking, can you please hurry up and finish? I've got stuff to do. you will get a kick out of this. Somebody tried to ask the fine folks at the McConnell campaign about how they felt about having a freak like Dennis Prager out there talking about how women should just have sex any old time that the man demands it. And, of course, no, we're not giving the money back. What, are you crazy? We're in the fight of our lives. We may get our asses handed to us by a teabagger in the primary, and after that there's a Democratic woman out there that wants to eat our lunch and beat Mitch up. Addison. I'm giving back the money. Mitch has a long and honorable history of trying to help the women's in Kentucky. Sure he does. Sure he does. That's why he just loves the women in Kentucky. That's why he had a strategy meeting to discuss all the sleazy, slimy, tawdry, nasty things that they were going to use to try to destroy. Oh, come on, Ashley Judd. Because they did have that, you know. they had a meeting to try to talk about just what they would do to Ashley Judd if she had had the temerity, you know, woman, bearer of Eve's sin that she is, to run against Addison Chinless Mitch. Allison Moore told the Hill publication,
"Senator McConnell has a long and distinguished record of defending and empowering Kentucky women, and he's proud to run on that record. No one stands stronger for Kentucky women than Senator McConnell, unless it's that heathen atheist Ashley Judd. Her we hate."
Right. Did I say a minute ago more on that in a minute in regard to, yeah. The 2004 Constitution Party, and if you ever want to just have a terrifying chuckle, look up the Constitution Party platform. The 2004 candidate for president from the Constitution Party is a really, really nasty person by the name of Michael Perutka. And he is also associated... with a neo-Confederate hate group. He's on the board of directors of the League of the South since 2013. He's also a homeschool candidate. Oh, dear. So that must mean he knows something about edumacating, right? Well, of course he does. This is from 2008.
Evolution. Evolutionary thinking is dangerous, and it's anti-American. Let me explain that last comment just for a second.
Oh, I can't wait.
Now, American political philosophy is based on the belief that the world was created by God in 6 days, and
liar.
This creation event occurred about 6,000 years ago.
Liar.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, we heard you lying.
American political philosophy, the documents of our founding, and as reinforced by the quotations in various other documents that our founders wrote, supports the belief that creation occurred about 6,000 years ago.
No, it doesn't.
So, the whole idea of evolution, that the Earth is a million years old or millions and millions or whatever years old, is absolutely antithetical.
Big word.
To America.
A million years are old. Hey, there's hope. We've got him to a million. I got a million. Do I hear two? I got Jurassic. Can I hear Jurassic? Can I get a Cretaceous?
When you hear folks describe the Earth as millions and millions of years old, like you do on every television show,
every television show, every single one, I cannot tune in SpongeBob SquarePants without hearing about how the Earth is millions and millions of years old, and there it is on Sesame Street, and damn it, even the cooking shows that I like, the Earth is millions and millions of years old. Football games, and now to honor America. Because the Earth is millions and millions of years old. Right. Every TV show. He said it, I didn't.
Years ago. So, the whole idea of evolution, that the Earth is a million years old or millions and millions or whatever years old, is absolutely antithetical to America. When you hear folks describe the Earth as millions and millions of years old, like you do on every television show or every news report, you should know that they are either willfully anti-American, which they could be, or they are ignorant of their own history and heritage.
What, Edith?
Now, Thomas Jefferson carried no brief for magical religion. Neither did John Adams. Ben Franklin was tolerant of all religions, but an adherent of none. Ben Franklin's buddy, my lovely wife's multi-great-grandfather, was kind of chased out of the local community, Quaker community in Pennsylvania, because he said, listen, my relationship with whatever I perceive to be God is my business and not yours. But those people don't exist in Michael Perutka's world.
Now, what I am saying is that the promotion of evolution is an act of disloyalty to America. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, he said. Do you understand that's what he's saying? Because he said he was saying that's what he was saying, then he said it, and that's what he said. That's what he said. An absolute, unvarnished idiot. In a world. No, in a time in this country where flying a flag of treason is deemed to be an act of heritage, this guy says the actual treason is acknowledging the reality of science. What can you do with that?
What I'm saying is that there's no way you could promote or believe in evolution and sing God Bless America during the seventh inning stretch.
We sing God Bless America during the seventh inning stretch? I thought that was Take Me Out to the Ballpark. I can't keep up. Not may not, cannot. You cannot sing God Bless America and understand that evolution is the means by which species evolve on this planet. I don't think he understands the meaning of can't.
You either believe in creation by which you have rights that government is designed to protect, or you believe that all men are slime and that you have no rights at all.
No, we just believe you're slime, Michael Perutka. Everybody else has a fighting chance. So let's review modern 21st century Republican thought. We can't have a National Women's Museum because we've already got malls. When they're not at the mall, and apparently, according to Dennis Prager, even if they are, I mean, you never know when hubby's going to get a little randy. Their only purpose on earth is to provide the sexual services to their husbands upon demand. And under no circumstances can the wonders that are America, as manifested by women in malls having sex with their husband, obtain unless everybody understands that evolution is treason. F me. That's I'm sorry, that's just too hard.
All men are created equal. They are not evolved equal. Get it?
No, dipshit, I don't. You know what? This country is screwed. I don't like to say it. It gives me no joy. But we're screwed. Because if we understand that it does not take a majority, but rather the barest of pluralities to screw up something, here you are. You know which way this guy votes. He's a member of the League of the South. He probably thought Willard Romney was too liberal, but in a pinch would vote for him. Probably thinks Sarah Palin is God's gift to America. And we only didn't get to have that gift because America has been overtaken by the gay heathen evolutionists. And there are millions like him. More people in the United States think that humanity came into being just shortly before the first woman had a conversation with a gossipy cobra than understand the theory of natural selection. We're effed. We're well and truly effed. I'm not kidding. Oh, mercy. By the way, this note came in from Robert in Australia. Bob, I'm back from the shops, and suddenly nothing happened. There were no armed gangs. He didn't have... Robert didn't have to shoot his way out of the shops with a loaf of Wonder Bread. No, there's no Wonder Bread. With a loaf of bread under one arm and a 44 Magnum clutched bravely in the other hand. Clear! Robert says, it's the 20th here. It's the 21st there now. So in preparation for the 20th of the month, your time, I'm putting $75 on the table. $50 for the daily needs and $25 for the phone fix-it fund. So that challenge is on the table, and if in fact it is met, we will have taken care of funding for today, and that will run the equipment fund up to, drum roll, let's see, $180 in the phone fix-it fund. So thank you very much, Robert. I'm glad you got safely back from the shops. You know, it's a lot different going to the shops over here. You've got to have a your home SWAT team, and you've got to run serpentine all the way to the, and it can get very confusing. So the 20th of the month Australian Up Over Down Under challenge is on the table. And thanks very much to Robert for making that happen. But I guess, you know, when you consider the Pragers and the, what's that doofus's name? I don't know. Perutkas and the Flesh Flimballs and the people who think that aircraft are raptured for God's sakes. And you understand that they exist by the millions and not just in weird little pockets of weirdness. What's the answer? Because I ain't got any. I'm fresh out. You'd like to think education would provide a remedy, but remember, education too is under assault, and right-wingers refer to education as government schools. Yeah. I don't know. I honestly don't. If you do, I welcome your input either by email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, or via Twitter, @BobKincaid, or on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. Skype chat, Bob Kincaid Horn. Anything. Because I don't want to see this country just sort of collapse under the weight of eternal vigilance. Not the price of freedom, but the price of intelligence. Because an intelligent people can keep themselves free. Stupid people, however, well, that way lies theocracy. So a little break, and then we will continue the conversation and or the filibobster, depending on how you prefer. Either way is fine by me. Thanks to Brandon for his kind words on my filibobstering recently. Saw that on Facebook earlier today. And we got some buffering going on, and hopefully I'll find a remedy for it in short order. In the meantime, yeah, a break is upon us. It's a $75 challenge on the table. This is the horn. The party never ends. Celebrating the vernal equinox with little springtime music, Donald Fagen, of course. From the Kamakiriad and Springtime, this is The Horn, Head On Radio Network, The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. I'm sorry, I got a little flustered there. I saw some buffering a couple of minutes ago and was trying to figure out if we were having a hard time reaching the server or what, and it turned out to be an or what. So we're okay. Let's see here. Sorry, doing multiple things at the same time, as usual. Thanks going out to Michael, who stepped up to answer a portion of Robert's Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month Australian Challenge. And that means that, let's see, there's only $55 in the challenge yet to remain. And now there is only $30 remaining. Okay, I get it, Philip. I'm not donating to match the Australian Challenge. I'm donating and hoping that others will do the same so that you will remove Ryan's ugly mug from this site. I'm all for the First Amendment, but I am concerned. I understand. But we'll count it in just the same, if that's okay, Philip. No, you know, I try to, and some days I'm more successful than others. Several of us try to pull together stories. And, oh! Yeah, okay. Just Eddie Munster, right in your face. The Paul Ryan white-splaining story is at the top of the Horn news aggregator. And, yes, he will, Philip, he will go away. Sooner rather than later, we'll just have to go out and find some more stories to push him out of the top of the rotation. That is pretty gross, I admit it. While we're lost in the wilds of question coming from Robert. Did episode 2 of the new Cosmos TV series get preempted in parts of the U.S.? I ask because it was all about evolution. 30,000 years ago, says Neil deGrasse Tyson, dogs didn't exist. We created them through a process of natural selection. The horror, the horror. Yes, at least one TV station in Oklahomistan managed to miraculously make the word evolution disappear during the broadcast. There's got to be some serious weirdo wingnut letters going to Fox right now. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch. Isn't it interesting, though, that Cosmos, the original Cosmos, was a PBS series, and the reboot of Cosmos is on Fox? I don't know enough about how television programs come into being to know how that little bit of irony transpired. I mean, well, the goddess of irony is the goddess of irony. That's why Fred Phelps checked out on the first day of spring. Life returns to the Northern Hemisphere. Fred Phelps departs the Northern Hemisphere and the rest of the planet. Well, no, he's not really departing. He's still part of the closed loop, too. Thank you, Sal. Thank you for joining in. There are only $25 now to go to meet Robert's Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month Australia Challenge. Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know. Did somebody else... Was it shopped somewhere else and CBS said, nah, that's a little too sciencey. Nobody will ever watch it. Or ABC said, no, we've got a hot new series coming up about people who can, it's a reality series about people who can grow hair. But it is worth noting that the original Cosmos was a PBS series and this is now on Fox. And I guess, what, National Geographic Channel 2 or something like that? Wouldn't know. Don't get any of them. But ultimately, there is a backlash. There's a great big dose of stupid running all over the country of people having hissies because, well, it's like that League of the South guy. Again, understand that when somebody like that says that he rejects evolution, and this is the most extreme form of it I've seen yet, you can't really be an American. It is the idea of humanity and the great apes being descended from a common ancestor. That's what stops them cold. because the idea of a common ancestor means that white folks somewhere along the line are related to the same folks that folks who aren't white, pink, whatever, pale, are all that we have a common ancestor. That's the essential mind. That's the mindset that from which all this filth springs. So just bear that in mind. Meanwhile, we've got a new non-troversy, and it's a doozy. Nothing in this White House escapes scrutiny and wild-eyed, paranoid, freak-out speculation. And when I say nothing, I really mean nothing. So we all remember when First Lady Michelle Obama said she wanted to plant a healthy garden on the White House grounds, remembering in the past that it had actually had sheep graze on it and so forth. So, but nonetheless, the right wing, how dare she? And she was called all kinds of weird stuff. And then the Monsantos of the world got upset because because Michelle Obama wanted to plant with organic heirloom seeds. How dare she? Right. Well, one of the people who helped her along in that effort was the executive pastry chef of the White House, a guy named Bill Yasses. And Bill Yasses has resigned. He is moving to New York to live with his husband and to try to take greater strides in what is called food literacy. Enter a truly dim-witted website and a dim-witted writer named Patrick Howley at The Daily Caller. Everybody, tennis ball, duct tape. Have them at hand. You might want them. White House Executive Pastry Chef Bill Yasses is resigning after First Lady Michelle Obama fundamentally changed his job duties to focus on healthier food. Yasses is leaving the White House in June to work on a new project focusing on food literacy, and the New York Times says Michelle is partly to blame. The openly gay chef was hired by Laura Bush. See, they can be tolerant too. Was hired by Laura Bush in 2007 to make his trademark cookie plates and sugar sculptures. Mrs. Obama took over in 2009 and ordered Yasses to make healthier plates in smaller portions. Yasses began replacing butter with fruit puree and sugar with honey and agave. But Yasses was never fully committed to the new policy. I don't want to demonize cream, butter, sugar, and eggs, Yasses said, noting that his departure from the White House is a bittersweet decision. Michelle Obama. Yeah, she's just Michelle Obama. That woman in our White House, you know. Michelle Obama said in a statement she's incredibly sad to see Bill Yasses go. I'm also so grateful to him for his outstanding work, not just as the White House pastry chef, producing the most delectable creations for everything from birthday celebrations to state visits, but also as a key partner helping us get the White House kitchen garden off the ground and building a healthier future for our next generation. I wish Bill and his husband, Charlie, all the best in their future endeavors. Yeah, Michelle Obama's to blame. Well, if you check in over at, say, the Christian Science Monitor, you'll find a little something. No, White House pastry chef didn't quit because Michelle Obama is anti-cream. Well, you know, cream's white. I mean, that's why it's cream. Did the White House pastry chef quit because he's tired of Michelle Obama forcing him to cook healthy food? That's the impression you'd get if you looked at some of the headlines announcing Kitchenmeister Bill Yass's departure. The story goes on to that Mr. Yass's began replacing some dairy-based ingredients in his confections and has used new-style ingredients, honey and agave, in the Obama White House years. But it also says he was never fully invested in this new policy, and it has the, and then there's the demonized cream, butter, sugar, and eggs. Peter Greyer at the Christian Science Monitor goes on to write, Yass's has been White House pastry chef since 2007. President Obama's nickname for him is Crustmaster. When he announced his departure, he gave an interview to the New York Times. And yes, this is how the wingnut tropes get started. Yes, Mrs. Obama is part of the reason that he's leaving, because she inspired him to want to go and work more closely on food literacy and helping people to learn that delicious food can also be healthy food. Yass's has said that he thinks food knowledge, as in the culinary arts, should be taught in schools. You know, once upon a time we did. Back then it was called home economics. And that was something that, you know, girls were supposed to take while the boys were taking shop. It's harder to find these days. I've still got a metal recipe card file of recipes that my mother copied out for future use when she was in home economics as a high school student prior to 1943. She also made what was referred to in the high school newspaper as a perky green corduroy suit in home ec class. Anyway, Yass's said he thinks food knowledge should be taught in schools. He also added that for formal occasions, 20% of desserts are still old-style cream-heavy, and he doesn't want to demonize the ingredients that go into those given their tastiness, but he has worked with Mrs. Obama to add fruit puree and other healthier ingredients that are still appetizing. She has done it with humor and goodwill without preaching. But this goober Howley can't be bothered to note that in his little hit piece, you know, because, well, you know, she's the Black Panther in the White House. Does that sound like somebody leaving in a huff because donuts were forbidden? The Blaze, Glenn Beck's media venture, does not think so. Blaze writer Oliver Darcy did a quick rumor check and decided that Yass's admitted fondness for cream was not why he's leaving. So then, over at Wonkette, they drilled down to find out just where the hell this came from. Guess who? Frank Luntz. Yeah. Frank Luntz. It always seems there's always a Frank Luntz back there, isn't there? By the way, Robert agrees with what I said. That's a question I'd like answered. Why is the new series of Cosmos on Fox and not on PBS? I hate watching the show with a Fox stain on the screen. And there's the answer. Ask and it shall be given unto you. Luda, noting Cosmos is on Fox because Seth MacFarlane is the executive producer and he works for Fox. So I guess it wasn't shipped out. It wasn't shopped around to CBS, and ABC didn't tell them that no, they'd committed the slot to the new, the awesome new reality show about growing hair. Although it was plausible, you have to admit, it was plausible. Hair today, gone tomorrow. New on ABC. And thanks, thanks to Wes for kicking in on the up over down under challenge this evening. We have only $10 to go now. Hi from Wes is a mess from Chicago, now in Manchester, UK. Thanks for the island of sanity. I don't know how good we are at being an island of sanity, Wes. Sometimes it feels like it's a losing fight. Steve in China noting, cream, food fight, cream, butter, sugar, eggs? Sounds a little French to me anyway. So, a la Freedom Fries, what's the problem? Well, the problem, if it had been Laura Bush's Xanax-addled, Librium-enhanced food literacy program, it would have been godly and good for America. But as it is, it's a radical Kenyan Muslim approach to destroying our food heritage. Ron and Raleigh. That uppity negress in the White House once again tries to run roughshod on the American people. Out, foul demons of cream and butter. Out, I say. Yes. Uppity. Uppity, shiftless. Soup to nuts. It's just one of those kind of nights. I can't get over Ann Graham Lotz being, those 239 little Chinamen got raptured before us people did. I don't know what's going on here. Meanwhile, you can't let this, there's some things that just cannot be allowed to pass by. This story comes from Tennessee, Church Hill, Tennessee. Not one word, two words, Church Hill, Tennessee. The redeeming power of religion. The Times News, in an article by Jeff Bobo, it's a story of how an ordinary day can just go straight to hell in a hurry. A woman who allegedly drove her car into a church Sunday night and then stabbed her husband in the chest at the altar because he was worshiping the NASCAR race at Bristol. You know, NASCAR is on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Also reportedly made numerous statements about her conversations with God and the devil. This is the story of Stephanie Faye Hammond. She's only 23. And she's from Church Hill, Tennessee. And somewhere along lap number I don't know of the race at Bristol, God started talking to her. That's how she figured out that her husband was worshiping the demon NASCAR. According to a report filed by Church Hill Police Department Chief Mark Johnson, Hammond called her husband, Stephen Hammond, after the crash. So, okay, we're kind of getting in medias res here. She got tired of watching the NASCAR worshiping. She got in the car. She drove to a church that she had recently gone up and fallen on her knees at the altar at. God told her to drive through the church. Now, it's not like it's a drive-through church or a drive-through liquor store or a drive-through. No. She drove her car into the church And according to a report filed by CHPD Chief Mark Johnson, Harmon then called her husband, Stephen, after the crash, and when he got there to the church and found her on the church altar, she then tried to stab him in the heart. But she did get him to leave the NASCAR race. In the report, Chief Johnson says she stated God had told her that smoking... I hate this. God had told her that smoking marijuana all day and all night was not good for her, and that she only needed to smoke it at night to help her relax. Mrs. Hammond further stated that she felt her husband Stephen was worshiping the NASCAR race at Bristol, which made her mad, and she began having thoughts that the devil put in her head. See, this is one of those places where I don't have the skill set. How do you know when the voices in your head are God and when they're the devil? I mean, does a little angel appear, a little Fred Flintstone angel appear on your right shoulder, and a little Fred Flintstone devil appear on your left shoulder? I don't know. Does God use the reverb? Mrs. Hammond? Can I call you Stephanie? Stephanie? You really don't need to be smoking marijuana all day and all night. Why don't you try just smoking it in the evening for a change? If you just smoke it in the evening, it'll help you relax. But then, I got no idea what it sounds like when the devil starts talking. I mean, does he sound like the most interesting man in the world? Is there reverb, or is it more of a phase shifted or a flanger effect? I don't know. And that, you know, hey, you know what? It may not have been the devil. It may have been transmissions from W, because as Jim points out by email, former DIM leader once got all drunked up and drove his car through the house down there in Texas. So shortly before 10 p.m. This past Sunday, Churchill Police Department officer Dustin Dean was dispatched to the Hammond's apartment because Stephen Hammond, having gone to see about his wife after she called him, he leaned over to see if she was okay, and she jammed the knife up into his chest. She didn't have to go very far, and neither did he. Providence Church is just across the street from their apartment complex. Mr. Hammond stated he found his wife lying in front of the altar, and as he checked on her, she said,
"The devil is in me."
And then stabbed him in the chest with a big kitchen knife. Mr. Hammond stated he pulled the knife out of his chest and fled the scene. He went back to the apartment where he waited on police and EMS assistance. The police recovered the knife as well as the Toyota Celica she was driving at an apartment complex parking lot in Allendale. Chief Johnson said the damage to the church was consistent with the damage to the Celica. Okay. Stephanie Hammond was located about 20 minutes later at the emergency room of the Holston Valley Medical Center. Dean read Stephanie Hammond her rights, at which time, and I guess there was no reverb, at which time she allegedly stated she decided to live for God and got baptized at Providence Church this morning. Well, that's okay. All's forgiven then. Uh-oh, it isn't. Because they asked at Providence Church, and they said, no, we didn't baptize her. Mm-mm, not us. Don't blame us. Not our, no, this is not on us. She went on and told the Church Hill Police Department, so God told me he wanted me in there, so I drove my car through the front doors. God told me to, so I did it. After I drove through the doors, I put all the things I brought on the church at the altar to the church at the altar. I called Stephen and told him I'd wreck. I laid down in front of the altar until he got there. The devil told me to take the kitchen knife with me. I prayed I would not have to use it on him, but I did. When Stephen came to check on me, I told him the devil was in me, and I stabbed him in the heart. Have you heard if he's dead or not? I smoke a bunch of weed. I love to smoke it. Sometimes when I do, I start seeing things that others don't. Isn't God good? He told me this would happen. Just look, I'm okay. I just tried to stab my husband in the heart. Isn't God good? And then she said that her family brought her to the hospital. I was riding with them to a party at the racetrack when they brought me here. I was outside digging in the mud when the devil told me I need to go there. I knew God would help me live right. Stephanie Hammond. Jennifer Hammond. Jennifer or Stephanie? I keep forgetting. Stephanie. Yeah, because it's Stephanie and Stephen. Right. She has been charged with attempted first-degree murder and felony vandalism. Neither God nor the devil have thus far been charged. I guess we could think of them as unindicted co-conspirators. Stephen Hammond, meanwhile, is in hospital, listed in fair condition as of the publication of that report. What's this about cannabis making people hallucinate? Did she get hold of something? Question from Marty. What would Marion Robertson, the former liquor supply officer, say about Mrs. Hammond trying to stab her husband after crashing her car into a church? Demons. Oh, okay. Ron and Raleigh says, you know it's God because he's got a heavy Yiddish accent. What if it's Allah? What if it turns out to be Krishna or Vishnu or Ganesh or Vitzilopochtli? Oh no. We're effed. I'm not going to sit here and just wallow in misery, but we're pretty well screwed. How pathetic do you have to be when you? I mentioned, was it last night, the story out of Parkersburg South High School in West Virginia, and the physics teacher who compared a gay straight alliance with the drunk sober alliance, drugged non-drugged alliance. On the same day that we note the death of Fred Phelps, it's worth remembering that there are millions standing there ready to take his place. Whether it be the physics teacher in Parkersburg, West Virginia, or teacher in Arkansas. Yeah, I bet you our buddy Fritz already knows about this. Taylor Ellis is a Sheridan High School junior. Sheridan High School being a high school in Arkansas. The article is over at Slate. Taylor Ellis is gay, openly gay. And I guess that's still not okay at a place like Sheridan High School, because the administration at that high school censored his yearbook profile. We all remember yearbooks, right? In his yearbook profile, Taylor Ellis described what it was like when he came out. National media attention was focused on the story when the story went national. The superintendent of Sheridan School said that, well, his coming out story wasn't consistent with the mission of our school, because apparently the mission of the school is not to support the students when they try to be true to themselves and true to their family and true to, right. Brenda Haynes is the Sheridan superintendent, and she said, we must make decisions that lead in the proper direction for all of our students and for our community. We must not make decisions based on demands by any special interest group.
Big gay.
The 7 profiles will not be published in the yearbook. Seven profiles of 7 gay kids. Interestingly, here's what the profile said. Although he thought of coming out of the and the repercussions of doing so, although the thought of coming out and the repercussions of doing so frightened Ellis at first, he found that most of the student body, as well as the teachers, were very accepting of him. That's what pissed off the superintendent of Sheridan Schools. Really, that the school was accepting. And so, lo and behold, even where they once were accepting, now they're not. Because it turns out that somebody created an Instagram page called Sheridan School Equals No Gays. One of the images is of two women holding hands with a red, you know, the stick figure symbols, holding hands with a red slash across it. Another one is two male stick figure symbols holding hands, red slash across it, and then a stick figure image of a male stick figure and a female stick figure holding hands. And under it says, any questions? Then, of course, the always hilarious, God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. One classmate said he was giving the school a bad name, you know, by being gay. Because America. Jesus.
It's not consistent with our mission. Because our mission is to make children feel very insecure and self-loathing. Because that's good for America.
And that's self-loathing. That's where greatness comes from, right? I mean, you're all hung up and you're not sure of yourself and you hate yourself at the end of the day and, well, you know, patriotism. Lottie observing in the chat room, that profile would have been approved if the student body and teachers had beaten him to a pulp. See how it works? Philip with a note. The right hypocrisy. Is there no end to the right's hypocrisy? First, it rebukes First Lady Michelle Obama for applauding basketball player Jason Collins' coming out. Now it rebukes her for allegedly suppressing the rights of her gay pastry chef to cream his cookies as much as he wants. When will it stop? Yours in mental illness, Philip. I don't think it's our mental illness, it's theirs. The problem is, it has an overarching effect on the rest of the country. And in point of fact, the rest of the country may be in for a mess. You are aware of this study out from the Goddard NASA's Goddard Center. You want to talk about something that'll Safa Motisseri of the National Socio-Environmental Synthesis Center and a team of natural and social scientists have published a report sponsored by the Goddard Space Flight Center, part of NASA. And it's not inspiring. Analyzing 5 risk factors for societal collapse. We were talking about this the other day. I personally argue that collapse is not something that's on its way to us. It is, in fact, here, we're living it. When 300,000 people can get their water poisoned and the first thing that a politician says is, this ain't about coal! When thousands of people and millions and millions and millions of dollars are poured into an effort to try to bring toxic, death-dealing goo down through the heartland of the United States, right on top of the central aquifer for that self-same geographic region. When toxic coal ash dumps into a river while the company responsible for the toxic coal ash doesn't even know it's happening, and when it finds out, says, well, we really don't know how it is, if we can stop that. It beats the dickens out of us. When BP is allowed to go back into the contracting for the new United States business after having ruined the Gulf of Mexico, when we have tanker cars full of Bakken crude oil exploding, trying to get from point A to point B, when seeing the sun in a city in China has become a noteworthy event, when breathing in those self-same cities has become a chore, yeah, the collapse is not on the way, it's here. So the study comes out, And five risk factors were considered by the researchers: population, climate, water, agriculture, and energy. How about that? No air. So they considered the five risk factors, and they said that the sudden downfall of complicated societal structures can follow when they form, when they converge to form two important criteria. The report says that all societal collapses over the past 5,000 years, which is about as long as we've had societies to collapse, have involved both the stretching of resources due to the strain placed on the ecological carrying capacity, okay, and the economic stratification of society into elites and masses, rich and poor. The elite population restricts the flow of resources accessible to the masses, accumulating a surplus for themselves that is high enough to strain natural resources. Eventually, this situation will inevitably, emphasis on the phrase, word, inevitably, result in the destruction of society. And the next thing you know, somebody's mucking out, mucking about down at the foot of the castle, hollering,
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
Elite power, the report suggests, this is over at policymike.com, elite power, the report suggests, will buffer detrimental effects of the environmental collapse until much later than the commoners. That means that the wealthy will continue business as usual, even though the collapse is already on them. Modisari says technology is not going to be much help. It's making things worse. We're talking about famine, long drawn out societal breakdown, overconsumption of depleting and diminishing natural resources. Hey, we're doing all of that. But they don't just complain, they offer some potential solutions. The two key solutions are to reduce economic inequality so as to ensure fairer distribution of resources, and to dramatically reduce resource consumption by relying on less intensive renewable resources and reducing population growth. Ain't gonna happen. Because, as Devin just pointed out to me, the hissy is well underway as a result of this report. The report also says, and this is a quote, historical collapses were allowed to occur by cities who appear to be oblivious to the catastrophic trajectory most clearly apparent in the Roman and Mayan cases. How many times have we talked about that on this program? And all of this goes without even factoring in something like an instant planetary emergency. Then there's this quote from the report. Economic growth, and I almost feel like we predicted some of this. Economic growth is the biggest destroyer of the ecology. Those people who think you can have a growing economy and a healthy environment are wrong. Okay, there's no equivocation in there. Those people who think you can have a growing economy and a healthy environment are wrong. If we don't reduce our numbers, nature will do it for us. Everything is worse, and we're still doing the same things. Because ecosystems are so resilient, they don't exact immediate punishment on the stupid. We should probably have that tattooed somewhere. Because ecosystems are so resilient, they don't exact immediate punishment on the stupid. Because the ecosystem cannot sort out the stupid from the intelligent. Instead, that kind of punishment is meted out upon the just and the unjust. But not really, because remember, the report says that the well-to-do will trundle along for a little while, but it'll catch up with them too. Here's the fun part. The walk back. NASA said, we don't want nothing to do with this. The sustainability study. It has been reported as being sponsored by the Goddard Space Flight Center. And NASA says, uh-uh, we didn't do it. A soon-to-be-published research paper, Human and Nature Dynamics, handy, Modeling Inequality and Use of Resources in the Collapse or Sustainability of Societies by University of Maryland researchers Safa Motisari and Eugenia Kalnay and University of Minnesota's Jorge Rivas was not solicited, directed, or reviewed by NASA. It's an independent study by the university researchers utilizing research tools developed for a separate NASA activity. As is the case with all independent research, the views and conclusions in the paper are those of the authors alone. NASA does not endorse the paper or its conclusions. Really, we don't. Please don't cut our budgets anymore, you teabagging assholes. I mean, NASA's a tiny little fraction of the budget, and mostly we just try to do fun things that present pictures of faraway stars and gravity ripples and stuff like that so that people can go ooh and ah and wow. And really, we didn't say mean things about the elites. We didn't. We promise. It wasn't me. I didn't do it. We weren't there. Well, here we are at the beginning of the third hour. Let's take a break. And even though NASA is running away from this study as fast as they can go, there's nothing in there that sounds crazy. I think most of us know most of this stuff. Because most of us, unlike teabaggers and birthers and deathers and tenthers and booger eaters and igum foos and libertarians and John Birchers and League of the South members and creationists and, you know, repiglickens. I think the Horn Family Commune, we live in the world. And when there is real, live, honest to God, when there are real instances of somebody holding a lighter under their flowing faucet and having the water catch fire, or when trains just willy-nilly explode, when a society declares that it's okay to blow up 500 or more of the oldest mountains on Earth to get its 6-inch thick seams of coal, and in the process poison virtually everyone who lives near it, well, then you know that life has become cheap because the hydrocarbons have become expensive. And because the people making the fortune off the hydrocarbons don't live where the trains explode, don't live where the dust fallout lands on the communities and gets into the little kids' lungs and the mommies and the daddies and the grannies and the grandpas and the aunts and the uncles and the cousins and the brothers and the sisters, the friends and neighbors, then it's not really happening to them. They're the ones who are living in a fantasy world. We get reality. They get fantasy. Ah, Devin wants an explanation of igum foos. I got mine. F you. I think that's tattooed on the back of every little Coke baby. Back of their neck shortly after birth. Maybe it's on their family crest. Igum foo. I got mine, F-U. because that's the essence of American capitalism as it has run wild and come and taken us to this point where we are not facing imminent collapse. We are in the midst of it. Go look at that projected map of Earth in rising and rising sea levels. I think it was Fritz who referred to the Gulf of Arkansas. That's about 100 years away, maybe. 100 years until Florida Keys, gone. Bahamas, gone. Turks and Caicos, gone. 100 years. Miami, gone. Everglades, gone. Just gone. New Orleans, gone. Houston, Galveston, Corpus Christi, gone. Veracruz, gone. Havana, probably gone. Baltimore, see ya. D.C., Foggy Bottom's going to become Underwater Bottom. New York, Boston, Providence, Mobile, Biloxi, see ya. And the thing is, by the time, and you can't build seawalls to protect all that. And that is the kind of stuff that brings collapse. And I know how much the wingnuts and birthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, igum foos, pig lickens, John Birchers, libertarians. Yeah, I know how much they hate the blame game, but it's not going to be your fault. It's not going to be mine. It's not going to be the fault of the people who think science is real. It's going to be the fault, and too damn bad he'll be dead by then, of that asshat who says it's treasonous to acknowledge science. And unfortunately, we can't make sure that all the deniers go live in Houston and Corpus Christi and New Orleans and Biloxi and Mobile and Pensacola and Panama City and Fort Walton and Tampa and Key West and Miami and Fort Lauderdale and Jacksonville and Charleston and Boston and Baltimore and Wilmington and dumbasses. So, about 10 minutes past the hour, with $10 left to go on answering, responding to Robert's Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month Australia Challenge, we will take a break. The Green News Report, this being Thursday, is queued up and ready to go. If you want to join the program, you can always chime in via Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the Skype contact, Bob Kincaid Horn. And we, I welcome you reaching out. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
once there was a thing called spring, when the world was writing verses like yours and mine. All the boys and girls would sing as we sat at little tables and drank May wine. Now April, May, and June seem sadly out of tune. Life has stuck a pin in the balloon. Spring is here. Why doesn't my heart go dancing? Spring is here. Why isn't the waltz entrancing? No desire, no ambition leads me. Maybe it's because nobody needs me. Spring is here. Why doesn't the breeze delight me? Stars appear. Why doesn't the night invite me? Maybe it's because nobody loves.
It's Thursday, March 20, 2014.
This ice sheet is actively deglaciating, and that's a pretty serious problem.
Greenland is melting, and sea levels are rising. It's official, this winter was the eighth warmest on record. CO2 emissions breach 400 parts per million again. ExxonMobil admits climate change will hurt the oil business. Plus,
we don't think anything has occurred like this in the last 350 million years. And part of what the problem is that it's happening so quickly.
Rising ocean acidification killing the shellfish industry.
All of those killings and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Temperatures will continue to rise for hundreds of thousands of years in response to the increased greenhouse gas emissions. And so we face many, many higher meters and tens of feet higher sea level, looking much farther into the future.
Oh, well then let's not do that. Climate change solved. You're welcome. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you say this winter has been the eighth hottest winter on record, correct?
Yes.
Not the first warmest winter on record?
No.
Then it's getting cooler. Climate change solved twice in one show. You're welcome again.
Oh, I wish it were that easy. In keeping with the long-term warming trend seen around the world, NOAA says that this was indeed the eighth warmest winter on record globally, even though it was really the cold in most of the U.S., because surprise, the U.S. is hot in the world. And that undeniable warming trend has serious implications for the Greenland ice sheet, where glaciologists this year were shocked to find a rapid increase in melting in what was once a previously stable corner of the ice sheet,
today,
according to Dr. Alan Hubbard in an interview with Peter Sinclair of ClimateCrocs.com.
This was an area that did nothing before. It was a stable piece of the ice sheet, had a frozen base. And now in the last 3 or 4 years, it started to speed up. And I think that means that this ice sheet is actively deglaciating. And that's a pretty serious problem of sea level rise.
Current models predict global sea level will rise about 3 feet by the end of this century. But even if that rate turns out to be correct, Sarah Das of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute warns it's not going to stop there.
Temperatures will continue to rise for hundreds of thousands of years in response to the increased greenhouse gas emissions. And ice sheets will continue to be melting over that period of time. And so we face many, many higher meters and tens of feet higher sea level, looking much farther into the future.
Meanwhile, remember last year when global atmospheric carbon dioxide briefly hit 400 parts per million for the first time in millions of years?
Boy, do I.
It dropped back almost immediately, but now atmospheric CO2 at the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii has again crossed over that 400 parts per million threshold, this time for a full week. Chief Scientist Ralph Keating says, quote, "It's just a matter of time before it stays over 400 parts per million forever."
And it did it this year, 2 months earlier than it happened last year?
Yes. That rise in CO2 is already affecting the Pacific Northwest shellfish industry through global warming's evil twin, ocean acidification. See, the oceans take up about half of our carbon dioxide emissions. More CO2, though, causes a chemical reaction that makes seawater more corrosive, and that makes it harder for marine animals to form their shells. That acidity is rising, says UC Davis professor Christy Crocker.
We don't think anything has occurred like this in the last 350 million years. So it's a really massive change. And part of what the problem is that it's happening so quickly.
And it's already hitting the Pacific Northwest shellfish industry. They've been seeing catastrophic losses in recent years, with millions of scallops and oysters dying off in record numbers. Kathleen Nisbet of Seattle's Goose Point Oyster Company warns this goes beyond just her industry.
I don't think society understands the impacts it has. They think ocean acidification, you know, no big deal. I mean, the ocean affects our lives. I mean, it affects everything around us.
This doesn't have anything to do with Red Lobster declaring bankruptcy, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Oh, okay. Just checking. I love those Cheddar Bay biscuits.
Luckily, those aren't affected by CO2.
Oh, that's good.
Finally, demand from shareholders has forced fossil fuel giant ExxonMobil to agree to release a report showing how climate change and climate change regulations limiting greenhouse gases will pose a risk to the value of its assets. The company says this week the report will show investors how ExxonMobil will plan for a future where climate regulation makes at least some portion of its reserves unburnable.
A future where climate regulation causes them trouble, not a future where global warming requires such regulations.
That's right. Kind of funny how that works,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? For much more on that story and the ones we could not get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help sponsor the Green News Report. For some reason, Red Lobster's ads here have all but dried up. Find us on the Facebook. Follow us on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Under the sea, under the sea. Each little snail here, know how to whale here. That's why it's hot, 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 hot. Yeah, we look here, now we get fucked here. Under the sea.
What's your father going to say? Your father going to say, I'm going to kill me a crab. That's what your father going to say. My favorite line from The Little Mermaid. Note coming in from, hour three, about 20 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Ron and Raleigh noting, well, once again, there goes Brad and Desi spouting those lies from the pits of hell. And Marty, I think this is tongue-in-cheek. She's only at UC Davis. If she were worth listening to, she'd be at UCLA. That's cold. That's just cold. And for those of you who've been wondering about the buffering, I found the source of it. It's really strange, but here's how it works out. Back in the other end of the mansion here, there was some TV, well, some video watching going on online. I don't know, a Family Guy or something like that. And apparently, downloading causes the upload side to collapse. You know, streaming. I'm not talking about, you know, actually, just streaming causes the upload side to collapse. We've got a great internet service provider, not. So that's the answer to that. Let's go to the Skype line. Devin is with us. Hey, Devin. Oh, wrong button. Better button.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. And now you know what Igum Foo is.
I see a lot of people like that. But, you got to love Brad and Desi. They just, best thing since sliced bread.
I look forward to Tuesdays and Thursdays here because they do such a good job with it. Right dose of snark coupled with the right dose of factuality. And lo and behold, there we were talking about, all this climate change stuff. And, 400 parts per million. How about that?
Yeah, we're on the...
And ocean acidification. I don't even spend a lot of time thinking about ocean acidification. I guess I will now.
Coca-Cola.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, you're carbonating the oceans. I mean, you know how you drop a nail in some Coke and
it dissolves
and the nail's gone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we're doing to the ocean.
Nice.
And around certain coasts, there's something called an anoxic layer, which is forming, and basically everything below that, is there's no oxygen and it's just dead stuff. And this is how the oil formed in the first place. Anoxic layers developed in the oceans, and all the dead stuff fell down in there, and it didn't rot. And then it got covered up.
Well, I mean, and that's essentially that's how the coal beds were created, right?
Well, the coal beds were a bit different. Those were, like swamps
They burned down, fell over, and sank into the swamp, and it was an anoxic. It was an anoxic environment as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's not exactly the same, but it's similar.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably more density to a giant fern that falls over in the swamp than there is to a giant dinosaur that turns into dinosaur goo.
Yeah, well, the stuff that's in the oceans, that's the plankton and various whatever microbes are floating around. That's what your oil is made from. It's not dinosaur lard or anything like that.
Okay. I think you just got another first. I don't think dinosaur lard has ever been said on this program before.
Well, glad to be a
sir. Well, I mean, you're a West Virginian, so you probably got extended family that has cooked with lard and bacon grease for yay verily countless generations. So we think about lard here in the hills and hollers, right?
Yeah, well, we always keep a jar of bacon grease around. I mean, you gotta have that.
Well, right, because a pan of fried potatoes with no bacon grease, please.
Sacrilege.
And now I'll get the hate mail from bacon grease, really? Yes, bacon grease, really. And you know what? What's kind of interesting, though, is
that... If you're doing green beans, you got to put them in the green beans.
I don't even use the bacon grease. I prefer a whole, whole slice of bacon in the green beans. And just let them simmer.
You can do both.
You're absolutely right, Devin. Let's not limit ourselves. Bacon grease and bacon. And a ham hock!
I mean, if you're already on Lipitor, what's the difference?
a buddy of mine is a pharmacist, and he told me years ago that, and this was before the statins came out, I can't remember, Lopid, I think, was the drug. And some of the old-timers that he filled their prescriptions, they would say, I come in to refill my butter pill. Butter pill? Yeah, I take this and I can eat all the butter I want.
Yeah. Well, you know.
But I mean, there is some. I was reading just the other day. It turns out that maybe the whole HDL versus LDL cholesterol thing may not be all that it was cracked up to be. Based on a survey of like oodles of studies on cholesterol and but we do know one thing. For instance, I mean, all kidding aside, your really, really classic Southern cooks will tell you, you cannot make a half-decent biscuit without lard. Or a decent biscuit without lard. And then, of course, years ago, we got the miracle of modern science, which is Crisco, which a lot of people moved over to instead of lard. But it turns out the Crisco is worse for you. The Crisco is worse for you than the lard is because it's trans fats.
Yeah, and now it's GMO.
Of course it is.
So
yeah,
you know, it just like the margarine. You know, used to way back in the old days. I don't know if you probably don't go back far enough for this, but when you got the margarine, it was clear, and you had to put. You had to put the coloring in it if you wanted to color in it.
No, I don't go back that far.
That's, you know, your parents' generation.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember my father
too.
Yeah, my father telling me stories about how much he hated the margarine that they had aboard the ship during the Second World War, and one of his most happy moments was when they docked in New Zealand and took on this humongous load of fresh creamery New Zealand butter.
And
he said the whole ship just about went wild eating nothing but bread and butter for a couple of days.
Oh, no doubt. Of course, you know, margarine is like one molecule off from plastic.
Is that kind of how lobsters are related to cockroaches? You know, like one gene away?
Yeah, something like that.
I know. I just ruined. Really, Bob? Did you have to? Sorry.
It's the stuff that.
Well, no. I mean, you talk about the trans fats being made out of GMOs. Of course, who knows what a couple of generations of eating trans fats that are made out of something that's got a gene spliced into it from the spleen of an Ecuadorian lava lizard. Who knows? Who knows what the impact of that is?
Well, I mean, you've got the BT toxin in there, and then you have, of course, glyphosate, because, you know, they spray it with it. You know, glyphosate does the same thing in humans it does in plants. It binds to the nutrients and, you know, deprives you of nutrients. You know, that could be part of obesity right there.
Sure. Well, and the thing about trans fats is that, what is it, the hydrogenation process is what makes them a solid. And so that even if you melt it, when it gets back into your bloodstream, it turns into a solid again? Is that how it works?
I would say probably yes. Lottie would know, but...
I'm watching the chat room now.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, R.L. Smith pointing out, I went back to butter here a while ago, use it on bread and potatoes mostly. Not every day by any means, but... Yeah, if you're gonna, you might as well enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've only got 20, 30 years left, and, you know, there won't be any butter or margarine, so, you know, may as well have fun.
Well, 20, 30, 40 years, there may not be any us.
That's the point. I mean, we're on the express train to the Carboniferous.
Yeah, didn't you love that line about, well, you know, we really haven't, this really hasn't happened in the last 350 million years.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, though, we do know what it was like 350 million years ago.
Within centuries, not millennia.
Decades. No, there's a possibility it's decades. How much, that good, you know, Goodbye Miami article by Jeff Goodell from Rolling Stone from a few months back that had such an impact on me. That's decades, not centuries.
Well, the full effect, you know, the full carbon efforts, you know, that's probably 100 years or so. To us being, this world being uninhabitable to life as it has evolved to be, that's decades.
I like the part of the report, you know, though, that points
don't
out.
Don't think it'll stop when we're gone. It'll take it a while to, you know, to level out.
Yeah. But I like the part of the report that says the 1% will continue to live like they are until it catches up with them too, and they just won't bother to notice all those pores.
Yeah, well, I saw a thing on that god awful Nat Geo channel, and
it is pretty god awful, isn't it?
About the bunkers, they had the big bunker for you know, the rich people, and it was built in one of the old you know, Minuteman silos. And you know, literally the place you know, was stocked for food for, you know, like decades, and they had a system that would you know, scarf up the whole internet before it went dark, so you know, they'd have something to entertain themselves with. It was quite a trip.
Oh, that's it.
In a disgusting way.
Well, yeah, and then there's the Scandinavian seed bank.
Yeah.
I mean, I always think about
we need the Scandinavian seed bank just to protect us from Monsanto.
Oh, exactly. I mean, look at the cradles of potatoes and corn, and corn is probably the single greatest foodstuff item in use on the planet today, maize. The cradle of that.
I wouldn't say greatest. The most used, yes. Greatest. It's a terrible thing, really.
Well, I mean, maize is a brilliant food, as are potatoes. But the thing is, all these genetic modifications have the potential to wipe out the cradle seedbed of those foods. I mean, we eat basically most in Peru and Ecuador. There are cultivars of potatoes that we cannot even imagine.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you watch that that episode where Tony goes down there and he's eating all them potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there were potatoes there that I never seen before.
Well, there's a photograph
I've heard of
in Charles C. Mann's 1493 that I was talking about the other night. There's a photo of a whole bunch of different potatoes from down that way, and they're mind-boggling in the difference of their appearance. I mean, you begin to see some of these differences in the grocery store. I mean, even here, you know, in Fayette County now, I can go over to my local Kroger and I can get some of those purple fingerling potatoes, or I can get some white fingerling potatoes, and it's a different experience. But that doesn't even scratch the surface. But if you start letting the genetically modified varieties that, you know, make a baby's arm grow out of your head in there, that's all done. Because the GMOs win.
Potatoes.
Huh?
They already have GMO potatoes.
Oh, I know.
Developed. I'm not sure that they've got them on the market yet, but I know they were trying.
Well, at one point in time, they tried. McDonald's wanted to use them for French fries, and Lay's Frito-Lay wanted to use them for potato chips, and there was such an outcry against the Frankenspuds that they backed off, or at least claimed they did. That whole account is That whole story is recounted in Michael Pollan's The Botany of Desire.
Now, the thing about the potatoes is they're a little less threatening. You know, they don't they don't disseminate their genes quite as virulently, or I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but you know, corn, you know, spreads pretty far. You know, when it
right, because of the way it pollinates and the tassels, and they blow on the wind.
Yeah. You know, potatoes are a little different. Well, quite a bit different. And of course, you know, these places down in South America, I don't think they're nearly as interested in having this stuff, you know, since they've watched the corn business.
Well, the traditional Mexican maize farmers weren't much interested in it either. But the thing is, if you plant some Franken maize, you know, 2 miles away from a traditional patch, you're going to wind up with. And yeah, I mean, look at how many times Monsanto has sued a farmer for having their genetic crap inside his stuff, and all he was doing was growing his crops. He wasn't trying to sneak in any Franken corn. He didn't even want any Franken corn. And it's especially noticeable, you know, all this canola oil.
I know. I just ate some.
And of course, you know, there's no canola. There's not a canola plant. I mean, there's no such plant as a canola. There's no canola seeds or grains. It's rapeseed.
Right. Yeah.
That's what it's called, rapeseed. R-A-P-E-S-E-E-D. Rapeseed. It's rapeseed oil. But it is marketed.
Yeah, little flowers.
It's marketed as canola because it's, what is it, the Canadian Oil Something Association? Because you could never get people to cook with rape seed.
Yeah.
So it's canola.
One time I got some of the sunflower seed oil at the Wally World, and it came from the Ukraine. And I didn't have a Geiger counter at the time, so, you know.
I mean, there are a lot of fascinating.
That's their big crop there too.
I mean, I love sesame oil is delicious. Walnut oil, I used to do a walnut oil beer bread that was just amazing. Yeah, grapeseed oil is nice. Kathy pointing out in the chat room. Oh, look, it's the food porn portion of the program.
Yeah, these days I stick to the. Either the very light olive oil, you know, light in color.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that stuff that looks like green motor oil.
Right, because that's got a much stronger flavor.
Yeah, and, you know, green things kind of make me sick, so I stick with the lighter stuff, and that and bacon grease.
Hear, hear.
I mean, you know, what else are you to do, you know, if you don't want the awful GMO, you know, that's about all you can do. I mean, you can get the quote-unquote canola oil that's supposedly GMO-free or organic, but, you know, you don't want to pay $15 for a pint.
No, because that, you know, at that point you might as well be shopping at Whole Paycheck.
Yep, but back to the Monsanto thing. They've pretty well made it illegal to even possess a seed separator.
Wow.
I mean, it's not in law. It's not written in law, but you know, if you have one and you pull it out of the building and you know somebody sees it. One of their operatives sees it, you know, they will sue you to death.
Yeah, because you can't compete with their ability to support a law, a phalanx of lawyers. By the way, I wanted to point something out to anybody who might be interested in doing this in their garden. If you will go to ecoseeds.com, ecoseeds.com, they've got a bunch of those old heritage antique varietals of maize. Let's see. Concha, Giant Incan White, Chulpi, and dig this. The stalks are about 12 feet tall. And then there's the maize morado, which is a sort of black maize or dark blue. Their stalks are 14 to 16 feet tall.
That wouldn't do here.
Let's see. Aztec red, Aztec white, Hopi blue, Hopi yellow. Those are flower maize. I love this website because it's just I grew some of the giant corn one year long ago, and it was fun. You couldn't do much with it unless you were prepared to go the whole route and, you know, mill your own corn flour or whatever. And these people also specialize in some really crazy chili peppers.
Now, this is the Redwood City Seed Company?
Yeah, it's at ecoseeds.com.
Okay. That's an interesting-looking pepper they have on the front page there.
Oh, well, that's a Scotch bonnet or a habanero, that first one you see. But the one that's really most fascinating is the tapine. It's hard to get it to grow because it's about half wild, but if you can get it going, it is a hoot. And they are little, they're about the size of a BB. And they're just amazing. Well, yeah, the tapine, T-E-T-I-N.
Something else I was going to mention, you know that pink stuff that they treat the seeds with?
Yeah, I've seen.
That stuff is really bad. Stay away from it.
What is it?
I forget what it's called, but it actually joins itself into the plant as the plant grows up, and you end up eating it. It's like to make the birds sick and die if they eat it, or that kind of thing. Yeah, keeps everything from growing on it and keeps things from eating it.
Yeah, I thought it was some sort of a preservative or. Oh, and by the way, note coming in from Darlene on rapeseed. Darlene says insects won't go near it. Very cheap to grow, and I read that Canada bought off the FDA to the tune of $50 million to get canola oil approved. Very bad stuff. You heat it, it's all trans fat, hydrogenated. Wouldn't touch it with a 10-footer. The insects have got it right, Darlene says. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
Randy tells us the pink stuff is an anti-fungicide.
Yeah. I don't know. Critters won't bother it, so it's pretty bad.
Yeah, they won't bother it until it's up out of the ground because I've seen an entire, multiple rows taken down to nothing by the rats with antlers.
Very true, but as far as the seed itself with that stuff on it, nothing really wants any part of it.
No, even the crows won't touch it.
Yeah, well, crows are pretty smart.
Well, aren't they the smartest of the birds?
I mean, some of them can even, learn vocalization.
Well, they're tool users, too.
Oh, yeah. They also drink whiskey, but, that's another story.
We need adequate time for that. the day Devin got the crows loaded.
Well, I didn't do it. It's
oh, sure. You say that now.
Great grandfather did. They had a crow that lived in the house with them. And, you know, this crow, you know, it would get up on a tin roof and, you know, it would say hot, 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 you know, that kind of thing. Really smart. But actually utilize language.
Wow.
You know, once it knew what the word was.
Yeah, Texas T in the chat room. Old Crow. Yeah. Was that its liquor of choice?
I don't know. Nobody ever said, but they said he did give it a little bit, you know, in a thimble or something, and it was a really funny bird then.
Happy bird, happy bird.
From a mason jar.
Well, doesn't all the good stuff come from a mason jar?
Yeah. Well, you know, during that time period, that's probably what it was. I mean, that was all the rage for most of our history here.
Well, you know, when it's good, it's very good. When it's bad, it's really bad.
Yeah. Now, you saw the potato bean, didn't you?
No.
I think I sent you this a while back. It's a plant that grows wild here in the U.S.
Oh, yeah. And Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, hopness.
Yeah, it's, you know, like grows along rivers and stuff. It's just a weed. But it's a legume. And, you know, so it makes these little potato-like beans, you know, in pods. But it also grows tubers. And it takes 2 years for the tubers to get big enough to eat those. And, you know, the Indians ate these pretty well all the time.
And they're described as being quite tasty. Also called ground.
Yeah, they taught the.
Also called ground nut.
Yes, yes. The Indians taught the pilgrims how to eat those. I think they made a terrible mistake, but.
Well, that whole let them get off the boat part was the biggest one, but never mind. Yeah, and yeah, these things. Yeah. The other thing I remember reading about the tubers, you cannot eat them raw because they are poisonous. But if you cook them, they become safe to eat and quite nutritious.
Yeah, they say it's just like basically just like a potato, but maybe slightly nuttier tasting. I've never had one, but. Of course, you know, great fried in bacon grease.
Because everything is.
Yeah. Yeah, that reminds me of that stupid right-wing version of a travel channel that showed up on TV there for a while. You know, they had some kind of show where... some guy travels around the world and eats bacon. That was the show. He just travels around and eats bacon.
In the wrong business. I'm just in the wrong business. I can eat bacon. For a living.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you could eat 1,000-year-old eggs, you could be what's-his-name sidekick, you know, Mr. Clean looking guy.
Oh, Andrew Zimmern.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of that.
Yeah, I always think of him as the Mr. Clean because he just looks like Mr. Clean.
You know, the one thing I miss about not having television around here is not getting to watch Anthony Bourdain. I mean, is his show doing okay over on CNN?
It was the last time I seen it. It's been away for a while, I think. I mean, wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, if they pulled it for being controversial or something because, well, you know Tony, and He's definitely more aggressive on this show than he was on the other one.
Oh, really? You think so? I haven't gotten to watch enough of them to really find out. And of course, CNN is so proprietary about it; it's hard to find.
Yeah, but I hope you get to see them. I really do, because some of them are quite impressive.
Well, I did see a couple. The Myanmar one was just fascinating.
You know, having the access to all those CNN resources. You know that.
Yeah, I saw the Libya one, right?
They've pretty well left him alone, I think. But you know that can always change.
Oh, in a heartbeat, absolutely.
But it'd be nice if they just give him a news show. I think he would do great with that.
Oh no, I don't think he'd ever. If you tried to, oh my God, I thought, what if they offered him Piers Morgan's job?
I think he'd do pretty good at it. The big honchos would probably have it pulled in the heartbeat, but
yeah. But see, the difference between a Bourdain and a Piers Morgan is that you like to think Bourdain would look at a wing nut and say piss off, or probably something much more colorful.
Yeah, he doesn't have the time of day for that.
Although, did you ever see the Ted Nugent episode? He and Ted got along famously.
Well, yeah, that's
shooting guns and cooking food.
As long as they didn't talk about anything, controversial. I mean, who doesn't like to?
Controversial, like dodging the draft.
Go blow stuff up and fire. Fully automatic weapons. I mean, that's got to be a rush. So,
well, I guess that's one way of describing it. Absolutely. So, are you gonna? Will you be along tomorrow night for Friday on the Front Porch?
I'm gonna try to.
Okay.
If I'm doing all right and Internet's working and all that.
God willing. In other words, God willing, the creek don't rise.
Yeah. I have to rely on a bird, 25,000 miles away to get something resembling Internet.
So
because we couldn't possibly have a wire or a fiber or something like that.
No, it's my eldest daughter is in a television vacuum, I guess. The cable comes to within a quarter of a mile up the road and within a quarter of a mile down the road, and they won't come to her.
It's 10 miles to the nearest cable here.
Wow.
Oh, and cell phones don't work here at the house. Some people can maybe text, but that's about it. Of course, I'm in the National Radio Quiet Zone.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You're out there where that stuff is all verboten.
Yeah, if you have a transmitter,
so that eventually we can get the message from Klaatu saying, "What are you people doing?"
Well, The Radio Quiet Zone has very little to do with astronomy, anyways. It has more to do with military purposes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I think about the observatory, the radio telescope at Green Bank. The Quiet Zone is a different thing.
Well, most of that facility is Navy, anyways, and of course, you know, Sugar Grove.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's where the plane, if you show up there, the plane clothes, you know, Delta Force, off the books guys will, you know, make you disappear or something. It's where they listen to the submarines.
Oh. I didn't realize.
You know, the ultra-low wavelength.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can find it on the internet.
Cool.
So.
Well, I've enjoyed our conversation. We kind of got to get out of here. We're at the we've reached that magic moment. So if the satellite's cooperating, we'll look for you tomorrow evening.
All righty. Thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure, Devin. We always have a rousing good conversation.
All right.
Take care. Bye now. Devin calling from the quiet zone. And we find ourselves at the end of the program. Thank you very much to Karen. Karen finished off the fundraising for Robert's Up Over Down Under 20th of the Month Australian Challenge. Thank you very, very much, Karen. And thank you, Robert, for being there with the 20th of the Month Challenge. It is exactly how we keep this going. Thanks to Wes, and thanks to Sal, and thanks to Philip, and thanks to Michael. Thanks to Paul earlier in the day. Every day we're able to do this makes the next day a little bit more likely. So thank you, one and all. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. For more than 10 years, Ben Birch has literally saved progressive radio at the White Rose Society on the Internet, and he's never sent a bill. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. That's where you go to learn exactly how we can go about stopping mountaintop removal and ending the ongoing onslaught against Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn.